The line between mental illness and genius has been a point of fascination for scientists for the last couple of centuries, and it continues to intrigue them today.
Mental illness and mood disorders have been evident in a wide spectrum of creative geniuses and their close relatives, from scientists like Albert Einstein to writers like James Joyce and Sylvia Plath.
But are these high-profile cases special exceptions, or do they indicate a clear link between creative genius and mental illness? It's a question that our next guest is trying to answer.
Dr. Nancy Andreasen joins us now. She's the Andrew H. Woods Chair of Psychiatry and Director of the Iowa Neuroimaging Consortium at the University of Iowa Carver College of Medicine. She's written a piece, a cover story in The Atlantic, called Secrets of the Creative Brain. Dr. Andreasen, welcome to the show.
Nice to be here.
So first of all, how do we classify a creative genius? How do we define someone as highly creative?
Well, there are two perspectives on how to do that. One, which is the one that I use, is called the case study method. And with that approach, you just identify people who have been very highly successful, highly recognized, highly rewarded in the study that I'm doing. Most of the people have gotten things like Nobel Prizes, Pulitzer Prizes, National Medal of Science or Technology, big Academy Award winners. So you identify people that I think almost anybody would say is highly creative, and then you go ahead and study them. The other approach is one that's called a psychometric approach, and that is done by giving people tests that tap into creativity. And the trait that people are trying to get at is something called divergent thinking, or the ability to come up with a whole lot of responses to an open-ended probe. A common example is asking them to think of how many uses can you think of for a brick? And an answer would be, well, for paving, for a floor in a house, for a bookend, for something you can throw at somebody, and so on. You know, you can think of all different kinds of things. And those answers are graded in terms of originality and fluency. And then the people in the top 1% on divergent thinking are considered to have the trait of creativity. So they're very different approaches. That is the more psychometric approach. And then the other one is the case study approach.
And why are you interested in checking out this possible link between creative genius and mental illness?
Well, I've been interested in that because for a long time. My original career was actually as an English lit professor, and I taught here at the University of Iowa for 3 years and a couple of years at the University of Nebraska. So 5 years as an English professor teaching Renaissance English lit. And as a person with a career in literature, I was very aware of people who either themselves had had were creative and had had some kind of mental illness, someone like Byron. Joyce certainly had some odd traits, and who also had mental illness in their families. Joyce had a daughter with schizophrenia. Einstein had a son with schizophrenia. Bertrand Russell had a son with schizophrenia. And so I thought, well, you know, most of my work involves studying people with serious mental illnesses, but wouldn't it be interesting and fun to look at the question of whether, you know, creativity and mental illness are related? And to be truthful, when I began the study, I did not expect to find very much illness in the group that I studied, which was a sample that was very handy. The people who were teaching writing fellows or faculty members at the Iowa Writers' Workshop, which is easily the most famous writing program in the U.S. and probably in the world. So I had a nice, interesting sample that was very handy.
And I think at one point that included Kurt Vonnegut.
Yes, it did. It included, a number of very well-known people. And it's funny because everybody loves Kurt Vonnegut. He's probably the most famous of the people who were in the study. And I like him very much, too. He's, of course, no longer with us, but he was a very nice and very interesting person, and we stayed in touch after he was a subject in the study. And even, he would send me notes and even a couple love poems. So,
Well, and now you've got these creative people, these writers. How do you measure their creativity, try to associate it with possible mental illness or mental illness-like symptoms?
Well, so I have these people, and the intent of the original study was to interview them. And the working hypothesis was that they weren't necessarily going to have a mental illness, but that they would have mental illness in their families, as, say, Joyce did and Bertrand Russell did, and that that illness would be schizophrenia. And then I was also interested in whether any of their family members have been highly creative. And so that study was very simple. I contacted them, told them about the study, and they agreed to come in and be interviewed. And typically the interviews lasted for 3 or 4 hours, much to my surprise, because I didn't expect them to stay in my office and talk that long. Once they got there, they just wanted to, they're literary people, good with words, and they wanted to tell me all about themselves and their lives and their families. And what emerged was that they turned out, the writers themselves, to have a high rate of basically mood disorder, depression. Some of them had bipolar disorder, but that was not as common. Bipolar disorder is having both highs and lows. I think it's very important to point out at this point, by the way, that when I say they had a high rate of mood disorder, that does not mean that they were depressed all the time throughout their lives or that they were chronically ill, because they weren't. I mean, the majority of the time, they were perfectly normal, and that's the way mood disorder is. People who have depression, most of them, I guarantee you that if you have 10 to 20 people around you, at least 30, 40% of them will have had a depression at some time in their lives. I mean, it's just a very common illness. And so, anyway, these writers had a rate actually of 80% in terms of what we call lifetime prevalence or occurrence of a mood disorder in their lifetime. And I had a comparison group of people whom I did not know to be highly creative. And I looked at the rate of mood disorder in them. Their rate was actually 30% using the criteria that I used. So the writers, had a statistically significant difference in rate of mood disorder from the controls. And there was more mood disorder in their families than in the controls. And there was more creativity in their families than in the controls.
We're talking with psychiatrist Dr. Nancy Andreasen about the secrets of the creative brain. We'll take the next step in a few moments and ask what the connection between those mood disorders and creativity might have been.
And we'd like to hear from you, too. What questions do you have about that possible connection, that relationship that might exist between creative genius and mental illness? And what about these research findings intrigue you or perhaps surprise you? Let us know at 800-642-1234. It's 800-642-1234. Or you can email us at talk@wpr.org.
This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Gene Purcell. We continue our conversation now with Dr. Nancy Andreasen about the secrets of the creative brain. And we'd like to hear from you.
Do you have questions about possible connections between creativity and mental illness, things like mood disorders? Why do you suppose there would be a link? What questions do you have for our guest? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or tweet us at Central Time WPR. Dr. Andreasen, you said a higher than expected incidence of lifetime mood disorders among your group of creatives. So what is the connection? Is there something about doing creative things that leads to mood disorders or vice versa? How do you tease that out?
Well, the way I think about it is that certainly mood disorders do not cause creativity. I think that's a real fallacy to think that way, that you have to have a mental illness in order to be creative. The other direction, that if you're creative, you're going to have a mental illness, that isn't necessarily true either. What I think happens is that there's a certain way of approaching life, a personality style, a cognitive style that characterizes creative people, writers, and other creative people, which is being adventuresome, exploratory, testing the limits, being somewhat unconventional. And when you're like that, you're more prone to, so to speak, maybe slip over the edge, but not necessarily. I want to make that very clear. Mm-hmm. And you're more prone to potentially be rejected by peers, by people who are evaluating your work because it's too original. And so you have to deal with rejection, which always hurts, whether, you know, you're a writer or a skier or, you know, whatever. And the thing about creative people is that they're also very persistent. So even though they get rejected, they keep on going. And I actually tend to think of the metaphor of the prize fighter who gets knocked down but keeps getting up and going back to the fight again.
So this spirit of creative adventurousness, I think you called it, makes us more prone to coming up with valuable creative output and also somewhat more likely to have a mood disorder. Not 100% either way, just a little more likely in both of those directions.
Yes, exactly.
Well, let's go to our callers. We've got Sean on the line in Kenosha. Sean, hi, you're on the air.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I just want to make a general comment. I suppose throw my 2 cents into it. But I personally am someone who has depression. I have never felt to be extraordinarily creative. But I have a relative who, he spends a lot of time writing, and he is very creative. I have never felt that he was someone who had depressive episodes or mood disorders. But I felt that most of his writing has been bland at best. So, and then also on my mother, she is someone who has depression, probably is bipolar, and she is someone who is extremely creative and inventive. She loves to do home decor, and she used to be an artist when she was younger.
Sean, thanks a lot for sharing your experience. Dr. Andreasen, does creativity and things like mood disorders, do they both tend to run in families like that?
Yes, they do. I mean, putting creativity to the side, mood disorders run in families. And putting mood disorders to the side, creativity tends to run in families. I would say mood disorder is more familial than creativity. But anyway, they both have certainly a kind of nature, if you think about nature versus nurture, a kind of nature component to them. It's not anything like 100%. It's, you know, more in probably the 20% range. But it's there.
I know part of your study in your research into mental illness and creativity is also geared toward finding out what creativity is, how it happens. I know you've put creative people in MRI machines. What kind of things have you discovered about creativity that way?
Well, there's a lot to be said about how creativity happens. The MR studies we designed are looking, the idea was to look at tasks that would stimulate the process of making connections or making associations, because the ability to make novel connections is, I think, a very key part of the creative process. And what we found looking at, this is a new study now, it's one that's ongoing, it's looking at both artists and scientists, and what we found is that the creative people in the study have more intense activations in the regions of the brain that are used to make associations. We call it the association cortex or cortices, because there are, you know, four or five of them in the human brain. So that's one of the things that we found that characterizes creative people.
And outside of the MRI study, I loved one thing you wrote about. We have a stereotype, whether it's an artist or a scientist having their aha or their eureka moment where they make those connections you were just talking about. But that's not where the creativity starts, is it?
No, it sure isn't. In this article in Atlantic Magazine, I talk about how creativity is really a process. It starts with preparation, And people are doing that preparation when they're going to school. I mean, in grade school, high school, college, and so on, they're acquiring knowledge, experiences that they're going to use later on to do something creative. And then there's a period called incubation where ideas bounce around and, you know, the information that's been gained is kind of nebulous and unformed, and then depending on, of course, the kind of creativity, but the key connection is made, the eureka moment occurs, but that's not the end of it. If you have all kinds of original ideas and you don't execute them, if you don't, you know, complete the process, you're not creative.
1% inspiration, 99% perspiration.
Yep, Thomas Edison.
All right. Well, Dr. Andreasen, we'll leave it there for now. Thank you so much for joining us and sharing your research with us.
Oh, thank you very much. By the way, I love Wisconsin. My daughter did her PhD there.
Well, good for her. I'm glad to hear that. Thanks so much for coming back to Wisconsin via radio. That was Dr. Nancy Andreasen. She's the author of the latest cover story in The Atlantic. It's called Secrets of the Creative Brain, looking at the link between creative genius and mental illness.
I'm Gene Purcell.
And I'm Rob Ferret. This is Central Time here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.